Chapter 6. He woke much refreshed, and even a little ashamed of his terror on the previous night. His situation was, no doubt, very serious. Indeed, the possibility of returning alive to Earth must be almost discounted. But death could be faced, and rational fear of death could be mastered. It was only the irrational, the biological horror of monsters that was the real difficulty. And this he faced and came to terms with as well as he could while he lay in the sunlight after breakfast. He had the feeling that one sailing in the heavens, as he was doing, should not suffer abject dismay before any earthbound creature. He even reflected that the knife could pierce other flesh as well as his own. The bellicose mood was a very rare one with Ransom. Like many men of his own age, he rather underestimated than overestimated his own courage. The gap between boyhood's dreams and his actual experience of the war had been startling, and his subsequent view of his own unheroic qualities had perhaps swung too far in the opposite direction. He had some anxiety lest the firmness of his present mood should prove a short-lived illusion, but he must make the best of it. As hour followed hour and waking followed sleep in their eternal day, he became aware of a gradual change. The temperature was slowly falling. They resumed clothes. Later they added warm underclothes. Later still an electric heater was turned on in the center of the ship. And it became certain, too, though the phenomenon was hard to seize, that the light was less overwhelming than it had been at the beginning of the voyage. It became certain to the comparing intellect, but it was difficult to feel what was happening as a diminution of light, and impossible to think of it as darkening, because, while the radiance changed in degree, its unearthly quality had remained exactly the same since the moment he first beheld it. It was not, like fading light upon the earth, mixed with the increasing moisture and phantom colours of the air. You might halve its intensity, Ransom perceived, and the remaining half would still be what the whole had been, merely less, not other. Halve it again, and the residue would still be the same. As long as it was at all, it would be itself. Out even to that unimagined distance where its last force was spent. He tried to explain what he meant to Divine.
"Like Thingamy's soap," grinned Divine. "Pure soap to the last bubble, eh?"
Shortly after this, the even tenor of their life in the spaceship began to be disturbed. Weston explained that they would soon begin to feel the gravitational pull of Malacandra.
"That means," he said, "that it will no longer be down to the center of the ship. It will be down towards Malacandra, which from our point of view will be under the control room. As a consequence, the floors of most of the chambers will become wall or roof, and one of the walls a floor. You won't like it."
The result of this announcement, so far as Ransom was concerned, was hours of heavy labour in which he worked shoulder to shoulder, now with Divine and now with Weston, as their alternating watches liberated them from the control room. Water tins, oxygen cylinders, guns, ammunition and foodstuffs had all to be piled on the floors alongside the appropriate walls, and lying on their sides so as to be upright when the new downwards came into play. Long before the work was finished, disturbing sensations began. At first Ransom supposed that it was the toil itself which so weighted his limbs, but rest did not alleviate the symptom, and it was explained to him that their bodies, in response to the planet that had caught them in its field, were actually gaining weight every minute, and doubling in weight with every 24 hours. They had the experiences of a pregnant woman, but magnified almost beyond endurance. At the same time their sense of direction, never very confident on the spaceship, became continuously confused. From any room on board, the next room's floor had always looked downhill and felt level. Now it looked downhill and felt a little, a very little downhill as well. One found oneself running as one entered it. A cushion flung aside on the floor of the saloon would be found hours later to have moved an inch or so towards the wall. All of them were afflicted with vomiting, headache and palpitations of the heart. The conditions grew worse hour by hour. Soon one could only grope and crawl from cabin to cabin. All sense of direction disappeared in a sickening confusion. Parts of the ship were definitely below, in the sense that their floors were upside down, and only a fly could walk on them. But no part seemed to Ransom to be indisputably the right way up. Sensations of intolerable height and of falling, utterly absent in the heavens, recurred constantly. Cooking, of course, had long since been abandoned. Food was snatched as best they could, and drinking presented great difficulties.
You could never be sure that you were really holding your mouth below rather than beside the bottle.
Weston grew grimmer and more silent than ever. Divine, a flask of spirits ever in his hand, flung out strange blasphemies and coprologies, and cursed Weston for bringing them.
Ransom ached, licked his dry lips, nursed his bruised limbs, and prayed for the end.
A time came when one side of the sphere was unmistakably down. Clamped beds and tables hung useless and ridiculous on what was now wall or roof. What had been doors became trapdoors, opened with difficulty. Their bodies seemed made of lead. There was no more work to be done when Divine had set out the clothes, their Malachandrian clothes, from their bundles, and squatted down on the end of the saloon, now its floor, to watch the thermometer. The clothes, Ransom noticed, included heavy woolen underwear, sheepskin jerkins, fur gloves, and eared caps. Divine made no reply to his questions. He was engaged in studying the thermometer and in shouting down to Weston in the control room.
"Slower, slower," he kept shouting. "Slower, you damned fool. You'll be in air in a minute or two."
Then sharply and angrily, "Here, let me get at it." Weston made no replies. It was unlike Divine to waste his advice. Ransom concluded that the man was almost out of his senses, whether with fear or excitement. Suddenly the lights of the universe seemed to be turned down. As if some demon had rubbed the heavens' face with a dirty sponge, the splendour in which they had lived for so long blenched to a pallid, cheerless, and pitiable grey. It was impossible from where they sat to open the shutters or roll back the heavy blind. What had been a chariot gliding in the fields of heaven became a dark steel box, dimly lighted by a slit of window, and falling. They were falling out of the heaven into a world. Nothing in all his adventures bit so deeply into Ransom's mind as this. He wondered how he could ever have thought of planets, even of the Earth, as islands of life and reality floating in a deadly void. Now, with a certainty which never after deserted him, he saw the planets, the Earths, he called them in his thought, as mere holes or gaps in the living heaven, excluded and rejected wastes of heavy matter and murky air, formed not by addition to, but by subtraction from, the surrounding brightness. And yet, he thought, beyond the solar system the brightness ends. Is that the real void, the real death? Unless, he groped for the idea, unless visible light is also a hole or gap, a mere diminution of something else, something that is to bright, unchanging heaven as heaven is to the dark, heavy earths. Things do not always happen as a man would expect. The moment of his arrival in an unknown world found Ransom wholly absorbed in a philosophical speculation.